Brett is such bright light.
What we do in therapy is nothing compared to what me and Brett did today.
Thank you, Brett.
Are you meant for more? Are you meant to live a life of richness, of adventure, of motherfucking freedom? If that's you, then this is your podcast. In this podcast, we bring on guests that will illuminate ancient and modern truths so that we can build the next generation of leaders in this beautiful world we are co-creating. If you're ready to learn some real tangible skills and some powerfully transformative insights, then pull out a pen and paper and let's dive right in.
I love that question. No one ever asked me that in this way. Let me just take a moment.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Brett Bailey Show. Very happy to have you here, as always, coming back each and every week. It's always great to connect with you guys. Today, we have a badass guest, someone who I've been connecting with just for a couple weeks now, but had a chance to connect with him finally over Zoom before we started recording here. And I'm very, very fired up for you guys to hear his story. He's a holistic health practitioner. I'm a Czech trained practitioner. Many of you guys know the Czech Institute. And he's just a really great guy. And he's had an incredible journey of overcoming some of the hardest emotional shit, which I know I can share because we talked about it, which is going through a separation with a loved one, an affair, going through being overweight, very overweight, and coming back and changing his health. These are many things that people take a whole lifetime to do. This man has found a way to accomplish in 5 or 6 years. So I'm very excited for him to share his embodied and intellectual wisdom with you guys today. So thank you, Michael, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited, man.
Likewise, dude. And we'll just come right back where we were. Right. You went through an very intense period of your life where you were 250 pounds or so.
200.
Where you were going. What's that?
250.
Yeah, 250. Yep. So 250 pounds. You were going through an affair at the same time. And you're saying that was one of the catalysts for you to actually make the change in your life. So if you could share with our audience, where were you? What was going on? And then, you know, who are you today? Where did you come from and who are you today? Take us from point A to point B, baby.
So starting with the affair, I was 250 pounds. I was a commercial service technician. And so I had a very physically and neurologically demanding job. When it comes to handling customers and troubleshooting things, I was miserable in my life. I was stuck in the mindset of keeping up with the Joneses. So I had my black Challenger, we got the house, we got the white picket fence, we got the dogs, I got my wife. Next thing I needed to do was just add some kids, which we don't have kids yet. And that's a good reason. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later. But I was miserable with myself. I had all this stuff that society said, go out and get it.
Yes.
And your life's going to be great. Reality was I was suicidal. You know, I tried suicide attempts. I was dealing with depression. I was dealing with anxiety. I was going through the affair, and the affair amplified all that stuff. The affair was essentially the flashlight onto all my insecurities and the shadow side of who I am. And realizing that I was 100% of my portion, which is 50% of the relationship I had with my wife, Kirstie, that hit home finally. And that was the driving factor to, it wasn't just, I want to be a better man for my relationship with her. It was, I want to be a better man for myself. And if I don't authentically take responsibility, real responsibility for my life, I'm going to be dead in a few years. I'm 250 pounds. I'm 26 years old at the time. I've got bodily aches and pains everywhere, knees, ankles, hips, back. I dealt with sciatica on the job. I rolled ankles, dislocated thumbs, dislocated shoulders, broken fingers, broken toes, you know, pushed out Atlas like at 26. Like that's not a, you know, a good definition of health, so to speak. So I realized that if I really don't start taking control of my life, it's not going to end up well. And so I started implementing the Czech Institute principles. I started dialing in my 6 foundational principles, which is your breathing, your mindset, your diet, your nutrition, your movement, and your sleeping. I really started dialing those in. And I gave myself plenty of wiggle room for the process, right? I allowed myself to be gentle with it, because what I found is if I tried changing all of them at once and it didn't work. So then, instead of giving up, I said, okay, let's start with hydration. I'm not drinking enough water. I'm not drinking the right kind of water. So let's get that in check. Okay. Kirsty mentioned I may be gluten intolerant. So now let's move on to diet. Oh, I am gluten intolerant. Let's remove that out of the way, which also removed beer because I was a huge drinker at the time. Budweiser was my water of choice, so to speak. Most beer is, you know, has gluten in it. So that removed a good section. And I didn't like a lot of the gluten-free stuff. So I just removed alcohol pretty, I won't say all the way, but pretty much out. Got my diet in check. Then I was like, oh shit, I need to be sleeping a lot more because my job demands it. You know, if I don't have adequate sleep, that's going to affect my mental fortitude on the job. That's going to affect me with being able to communicate to customers genuinely, you know, not make me feel put off. Like there's a lot of people that I worked with that didn't give a shit about the customer. And I don't need one of those people. So in order to show up properly for them and to properly diagnose what was wrong with the units I was working on, I needed to have 8 hours of sleep and it needed to be quality sleep. So I started implementing that, you know, and then I was like, okay, I've lost maybe 20, 30 pounds just off of adding water, correcting my sleep and correcting my nutrition. It's been 3 months. Let's get some movement in. So then Kirsty, she was you familiar with the show American Ninja Warrior?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
She's a 5-time competitor. And she's also been on Team Ninja Warrior and Ninja versus Ninja, which those two shows are the same. They just had a name change. If you look up Kirsty Pratt on YouTube, one of the first videos is going to be her racing side by side against Jesse Graff on a one-on-one. I won't spoil anything for you. It's just a really good race. We'll put it that way. But she was opening a premier ninja facility in St. Louis. And at that time, when I started my self-development, I didn't want to be a service tech anymore. So I jumped ship and I started coaching with Kirsty in the sport of American Ninja Warrior. And that's when the coaching bug first bit me.
How was it? How was that first bite, that first taste?
It was incredible because I was working with children at the time. And I found it much easier working with children than working with adults because children they weren't afraid to listen to you. Especially if you created a safe enough environment while they're learning these obstacles, they'll listen to you and you can, you know, it was just a lot easier to slip subtle insights and nuggets for their life to improve during the course of training. One, because they were on obstacles and obstacle training is fun, right? So when you put a child in an atmosphere of fun, they're going to learn a lot more because it's going to sink in because they're engaged with the activity. So I would be teaching them the 6 foundational principles while we're going through our obstacles, right? We got a kid that's, you know, has an inverted breathing pattern or holds his breath while he's trying to go through the monkey bars or trying to do the salmon ladder, or he holds his breath as he's trying to run up the wall. Hey man, don't hold your breath. Here's how you properly breathe. You know, put one hand on your chest, put one hand on your belly. Let's do a full diaphragmatic breath. That's the first 2/3 go into your belly. Last 1/3 into your chest. Release it out. Now that you know how to breathe, keep that breathing through your movement because it's going to keep you more fluid, right? Oh, I got a lot of headaches because I'm working out now. All right, we got your breathing on point. How's your water been? What do you drink water-wise? I drink a lot of juices and stuff. Okay, well, let's substitute juice for water. Let's start or let's add in 10, 15 ounces of water a day. When you show up for a session with me, first thing you do is you either go to the drinking fountain and you get, you know, 4 seconds of water, or if you have your own water bottle, you drink 3 or 4 gulps of water and then you warm up and then you come see me and we'll make sure to get you water breaks to the day. Because if you're not properly hydrated, your body's not going to properly function.
Yes. Well,
the headache started to go away. Then I looked into, you also have a gluten intolerance. Try removing gluten for 2 weeks. And I would tell the parents, you know, remove gluten for 2 weeks out of their system, see how they respond and how they react. Reintroduce it into their system, see how they respond and react. Tell me if you notice a difference. Not a lot of parents I could get to roll over on that. So there was only one client that did that with me, and they noticed a huge improvement. Yeah. Not only with his mental function, but his anxiety went down. So medication he was on was able to stop.
My God.
And that's just by removing a food, just one food, you know, group, which is gluten.
Which in school we get taught, this is a health food. You're going to get your grains in. You're going to, you know, good. It's high up on the food pyramid. You know, it's pretty ridiculous. Okay. So you're basically like coaching these kids like proper shit at a very young age.
Yes. And I'm doing it alongside with my wife, who at the time, she's a Czech practitioner. She's been a Czech practitioner since 2015.
Oh, got it.
She's been certified for quite some time. She's got lots of experience doing it. And now she's, I believe this year is going to be a decade or no, next year. Next year will be a decade that she's been in the coaching. It's insane. Beautiful. So everything I'm teaching them, I've learned from her, and I've learned from reading, you know, she's had her manuals out. So I'll just crack open HLC-1 manual, go read about it, talk about water, or talk about, you know, your breathing pattern or core function and how that, you know, controls the body. And, you know, reading How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy really helped too, because if you don't have that book, everyone who's listening, and you're ready to take charge of your health and your life, go buy the book How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy by Paul Check and read it. And then he's also got some beautiful questionnaires with some charts that you can figure out, you know, what food works best for you. You could figure out how to balance your four doctors, which is your doctor happiness, your doctor quiet, your doctor movement. And I always forget the one doctor.
Doctor quiet, movement, diet, happiness.
Happiness. Yep.
Happiness.
Yep. Which you shouldn't be forgetting that one, because Dr. Happiness is the chief physician. If you're not happy, none of the other doctors are
good. Chief physician. I love that.
That's Paul's words, not mine. So I'm just,
I believe it. Yeah. Yeah.
Saying it. But, we got into there. That got me super excited about coaching. And then we had a little bit of a fallout with the gym. So I went back into the service industry, still applied the principles, became a better service technician. And then in 2021, Kirstie flew out to California for a client. When she came back, she goes, "Hey, why don't we move to California? We've been, you know, saying this for some years now. Why don't we just do it?" And I was, without hesitation, I was like, "All right, let's go.
Let's go."
So crazy. 2021, we sold our house. We sold my charger at the time, her truck. We sold 90% of all our belongings. We fit the other 10% in the RV. We had two dogs at the time. And we just hit the road. And we ended up landing in San Diego, where we work with Paul every week. Kirstie is actually running his social media. So everything on Instagram, TikTok.
Oh, cool. I didn't know it was Kirstie.
Yeah, that's Kirstie running. And then I'm coaching the kids, Mana and Zoe. Right. And they have taught me a fuck ton. Oh, my God.
I believe that. How old are the kids now?
Mana's 7. Zoe just turned 4 last week.
Got it.
Oh, and I started working with them when Zoe was 2 and Mana was 5.
Got it. Okay. Got it. Very cool. I always think it's hilarious how adults think that they're smarter than kids. I mean, in obvious ways they are, but in non-obvious ways to our culture, they are vastly smarter than we are.
Yeah. When it comes, I love it, because moving out to California, one of the things that Kirstie and I were calling in for ourselves was more play. We wanted more play in our life. And I'm working with 2 kids where the majority of my job is to go play and have fun. So we throw water balloons at each other. We go swimming in the pool. I take them for hikes. We go, you know, on picnics. We go to the park. We go to science experiments. I teach them fun games, play board games. I teach them about the food.
Yeah, which I know, if I recall correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, is Paul's very big, and I agree with him, that our school system pushes us into the left hemisphere of our brain a bit too quick. So he's big on more play, more creativity, human connection, relational skills, before moving into more logical things that maybe, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, he is. He actually, both Mana and Zoe are in a Waldorf school system. So Waldorf, as you know, is designed by Rudolf Steiner.
Okay.
And Paul has like almost every Rudolf Steiner book you can think of Like, that's one of his biggest, him, Carl Jung, like, he's all for it. And it's true. I mean, I notice a difference. I see other kids out in public here in California, and their life force and their vitality, and, you know, it's not nearly as high as Mana's and Zoe's.
I believe it.
Now, from a parenting perspective, Mana and Zoe can wear you out quick. they're, as you know, both got two wives. So it's Paul, Penny, and Angie.
Right.
I'm there throughout the week. And so between the four of us and then the other nanny that works with them, they just hired another one because I'm stepping into coaching more. I've got more clients, so I need to make that my priority. So Mondays and Fridays, I now work with the kids versus every day of the week. So between five and six of us, we're all tired at the end of the week, chasing these damn kids around and trying to keep up with
them. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Wow. I mean, it's incredible for a reason, for the reason that I love how much energy kids have. And I also think, like, when I reflect on myself, for some reason, whenever I play sports, or I'm just like, whenever I'm with friends, we're just tossing a Frisbee round or a football, I can literally play for an entire hour. Like, I can just constantly play because, and I know I'm tapping into my kid energy, where I played sports all the time. I could run, I could play hockey outdoor. I'm from Canada. I could play hockey outside for, you know, 6 hours straight, not blink an eye, you know, it's incredible. And that's one of the ways that I think kids can really teach adults, is that they have so much play and life force. And the energy that comes from playing, the energy that comes from being silly, you know, the energy that comes from laughing. These are all things that that are absolute medicine and nourishment. And I think adults really need to tap more into.
I totally agree with you. And I've actually, for the last 2 months, been posting every now and then about how to get more play. You know, I don't have the biggest social media following, and I'm not overly looking for it. I just want to, you know, speak what's on my heart, and whoever it hits, you know, that's kind of my goal.
Yeah.
But for me, play is huge. As adults, we forget to play. You know, we go through the standard education system, which teaches us, you know, what to think, not how to think. Teaches us to be good little factory workers, not question the system. And whenever you fall in line with that, you're severely codependent on big government, big agriculture, big pharma, and big education to provide everything you need. And after college, you realize, oh shit, I still don't know anything. You know, I've done everything that we're supposed to do, but I still don't know anything.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know where I was going with this, but it just kind of came that way. You got something?
Well, yeah. Well, let me just pile onto that, because that's one of the things I'm the most passionate, especially the education system, but education and everything, including big pharma and agriculture. And it's a big umbrella for sure. It's just like the information that we've received from since we were in the womb until we came up, until we graduate college. There is this, this study will paint my piece here really well. There is this study that was done on three-year-olds. For what percentage of three-year-olds, I'll ask you, what percentage of three-year-olds do you think were tested as creative geniuses? What percentage of them do you think?
They were
studied and tested for what the criteria for being a creative genius. How many three-year-olds percentage-wise do you think were tested as a creative genius? And I'll say compared to college graduates, because that's where I'm going with this.
I would say about 10% of three-year-olds would probably be considered creative genius. And I would probably say maybe 1-3% of, you know, adults.
That's a super good guess. And I think when I say creative genius, I should have defined the criteria a little bit better, because it makes it sound like a Mozart or something like that. and honestly, because this is the second time I've asked this question to someone, and I need to frame it better, because everyone always guesses way low. So 98%.
Wow.
98%.
Wow.
And then when you graduate college, you're right, it was 2%. So it was a direct flip. So something happens between when we're 3 years old and when we graduate college that zaps that creative energy from our body, that zaps that, because creativity doesn't come from the head, it comes from the heart, you know, as far as I understand creativity, you know. And so something happens that takes it out of our heart from age three to, you know, to college. And my mind instantly goes to the education system. It instantly goes to, what's my education around my diet? What's my education around my social relationship? What's my education around my purpose and what I'm here for in spirituality. There's so much information that we get fed very subliminally from, you know, very sneakily is what I'm really trying to communicate. Very sneakily,
yeah.
You know, from when we're very young until we get old. And why is it normal to be obese? Or why is it normal to have a few extra pounds? Why is it normal to have the afternoon crash? Why are all these fucking things normal? And I think it's a very exciting time to be at that stage of the journey when you're a person who starts to question these things for real, and you start to really take your power back and start to think for yourself. Wait a second. Do I want to believe that? Wait a second. Is that really true? Should I listen to that person? Or is there someone else like Paul I can listen to? Is there another way of education? Is there another way to go about how I move and how I think and how I eat? So, yeah, man, you got me all fired up for the conversation, because it's literally like one of the forces that drives my existence.
That's good. You know, I just want to add one thing. The beautiful thing about Paul is a lot of people, when they encounter him, they see him as like a cult leader.
he definitely can sound at times. I'm like, okay, I see how people can perceive him that way.
the one thing I will say, I've been working with this man consistently for the last 2 years, and I've seen him at birthday parties. I've been to events with him. I've been at his house every week. I smoke bags with him. Yeah. I've been on a podcast with him. There has never been another human who lives what he preaches. He's the epitome of practicing what you preach. And every day he's got a routine and he nails it every time. And when he talks about being a conscious king, I've never met another human who's stepped into his conscious kingship, meaning he's taking ownership of every thought, every action, every word that comes through him. Regardless of what the repercussions are, be it good or bad, he's taking responsibility for them. So when he, you know, I was his personal chef for a little bit as well, for like 5-6 months. So when he wanted a little something sweet, his body doesn't really do well with coconut, but maybe he'll have a little bit of coconut, and he knows, and he'll even say it out loud, I know what this coconut's getting ready to do to my body. I'm going to be pretty itchy. I may have a few bumps here and there, but I'm craving something sweet, and this is what I'm going to do. Boom, eats it. And he just embodies it. And he doesn't force you to believe what he teaches. That's one of the biggest misconceptions amongst people who view Czech practitioners and other Czechies, is that we've been fed this programming and we're forced to believe it. He always tells us to put everything he says to the test. Yeah. Test it for yourself.
Yeah.
And if it works, you know I'm right.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, more than likely you didn't do it right. That's usually what it is. And from personal experience, everything he's given me to put into practice since I've been working with him, plus all the stuff I've read and going through the courses and stuff, when I put it into practice, yes, as demonstrated to me, it fucking works.
Oh, fuck. Well, how can you argue with that? You can't argue with that, especially if you're you know.
I'm living testimony to it.
Yes, 1,000%. Yeah,
I broke through my depression. I'm no longer suicidal. I haven't been suicidal since 2018. I'm no longer have anxious moments. I'm able to consciously communicate to other people. Like, I'm implementing all the foundational principles to the best of my ability, and I'm also knowingly, you know, every once in a while, I'm gonna go grab, you know, like, you can't see it, but we made nachos last night. Mm. Right, we just got some gluten-free, you know, cassava flour tortilla chips. And we made, you know, organic grass-fed nachos.
Great. I bet they're absolutely fucking delicious.
They were delicious because we used raw cheese, and we grated raw cheese over it. You know, we had the jalapenos that was organic. We had regenerative farmed
awesome
beef and fajitas and fajita mixture in there. So, I mean, even
making me hungry over here, son.
even when we do eat some of these beautiful foods, you know, like, I love ballpark nachos. Big part of being in St. Louis was going to the St. Louis Cardinals baseball games and getting some ballpark nachos.
Yeah.
We can now make them, and they're way cleaner and made with ingredients that don't overly upset me like the standard ones do. And that's the thing too, a lot of people don't understand what food can play on your psychological mind. You can become very anxious. You can become very depressed. You could become very angry, you can become very irritable, you can become very sad just by eating food.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And there's a ton of scientific evidence to show that. What I really want to communicate to anyone listening is that, because frankly, when you say, you know, I made this nacho dish with, it's all organic and grass fed this and it's raw, I think for some people, including my former self, I'm like, fuck, that's so complicated. I could never eat that healthy. It seems like so much work. And all these things would come to my head, you know, when I was still in my journey. And, you know, but you were in total shit. You were suicidal. You were depressed. It's like, you can't, like, it's very, very possible to do. And now I'm sure it's a habit. It's, you know, tremendously easy compared to what it used to be. Like there was a time when I was going through bulimia where I was like, I honestly don't think I can get over this. I literally just did not see how it was fucking possible for me to change my body and change my habits and fix my emotional problems. I literally was like, I don't think I honestly was like, in some moments I was like, I don't think I can do this. Actually, it just seems so fucking hard. And so for anyone out there who's listening, who's like, well, fuck, I'm 250 pounds or, you know, I have this, I'm depressed as shit. Or like, I'm broke or I'm in debt or whatever it may be. It is a journey, but you, my friend, as you said, are living proof that you can go from eating shit and feeling like shit and wanting to kill yourself to eating organic fucking nachos with your beautiful, you know, wife and, you know, living an amazing thing. Like, it's so possible. What were some of the things, psychological shifts that you had to make that you could impart on somebody right now who's going through it? And I mean specifics, like words you said to yourself in your own head, image, things that you imagine, and what did those images look like? Things you would do with your body that would create energy. I'd love to, if you could share some of those secrets for creating real transformation.
Yeah. I am good enough.
Boom.
I am good enough. And when I use those words, I did that with mirror work. So I would get in front of the mirror and I would look deep into my eyes. And this was even more powerful when I smoked cannabis, because at the time I had never smoked weed before until I was 27. I stayed away from that. I stayed away from most drinking and smoking, predominantly because of my dad passed away when I was 12. He got hit by a drunk driver. And so that steered me away from like drinking and drugs. Plus I got a lot of family members that go down that path, and I didn't see that how weed could be helpful. But I smoked a little bit of weed. I looked at myself in the mirror, because like I said prior to getting on this, whenever I smoke weed, you can use it to escape your reality if you want, and that's okay. And when you take it in your hands before you ingest it, and you honor it, and you thank the marijuana plant and its spirits for joining with you, and you set an intention to, while I'm on this medicine journey, I'm going to break through such and such. For me, it was, while I'm on this medicine journey, I'm going to learn to love myself. And part of learning to love myself is realizing that I'm fucking good enough for what it is that I desire. Set the intention, smoke it, go get in front of the mirror, lock eyes with myself, and mean it whenever I say it. I am good enough. Michael, I love you. Michael, you are handsome. I was 250 pounds at the time.
Yes.
Michael, you are handsome. You are worth it. You are worthy. You are capable. Those are things that I would do in the mirror. And then whenever I would encounter hardships at work, it would be flipping my mindset. I would use a technique called snap out of it. And that's where I allow myself for 5 seconds to just lean into whatever it is that I'm feeling. If I'm feeling pissed off at a customer, I go out to my truck, say, hey, I'm going to go back. I need to get a tool, or I need to get a part, or I need to get a cleaning agent, you know, for this. Go out to my truck, open up the 2 back doors, and just let myself be in that emotion. And then after 5 seconds, I would bring in breath. I would inhale, I would snap, and I would jump from one location to another location.
Like, yeah.
Like, so I'm in an RV right now. So, yeah. So if I'm pissed, I'm just stewing. I'll tense myself. I'll allow myself to feel it. Take my breath. Literally, I'm jumping into a new mindset.
I resonate with that. I've heard a lot. Yeah.
Jumping into a new mindset. And then being gentle with myself. being gentle with myself, because this is the first time. I'm 26, 27 years old. This is the, not right now, but when I was implementing it, that was the first time I had ever encountered coming up against emotions and trying to work through it.
Got it. Coming
the shadow side, coming up against the wounds in my heart and trying to nurture them.
Yes.
And so learning how to do that required vulnerability from me with me to see myself in the mirror. Like, it's funny looking back at it, because I used to be so scared to do shit like that.
Yeah.
But then also to positive affirmations. You know, we've got them. I won't show the camera all around, but we have them all. We got one, you know, right over there. We got the universe has big plans for me. You know, we got, you know, these positive affirmations everywhere in the RV, so that no matter where we're at, we can always look up at any particular wall or window or fridge, and we've got it there. And we just recite that, because it's true. When it comes down to loving yourself, you have to be honest. And there are a lot of people out there that can honestly say they don't love themselves, because they've never been taught. And that's okay. You know, it's okay to not know how. It's okay to want to ask questions around it. It's okay to look for help, especially if you're a man. You know, I was very physically abused as a child by my father. So as much as it sucked when he died, it was also kind of nice, because I didn't have anybody beating on me anymore. But I had a lot of trauma around it. And so I didn't feel safe to talk about that trauma with anybody. But when I got with myself in the mirror, I started to become safe with myself. I started to feel that wholesomeness. I started to feel that I could bring that safe container to myself and start the process. Just have conversations with yourself in the mirror. And the reason why this is so important is because, let's just say you're married or you're hunting for a girlfriend. Once you get that girlfriend, eventually one of you two is no longer going to be here, or boyfriend, whether, I don't know what, you know, gay, straight, lesbian, doesn't matter to you. You live your life and live it to the best of your ability. But when it comes to human connection, you know, Brett, you're not going to be here one day. So if you were to go right now, boom, it's just me. Now I have to spend these moments with me and me alone. I'm the only one on this earth that I'm constantly with.
Yeah.
So it's that much more powerful that I have a great relationship with myself, because in those moments of silence, in those moments of loss, it can get scary and depression can set in. But if you have a great relationship with yourself, you'd be like, hey man, that does suck. You know, you lost your dad early. That blows. A lot of people out there have great relationships with their dad. You didn't, you know, that's okay. I got you. Right. That gives you a chance to go back to that little self, or even yourself now, and say, I got you, because you have to, because you can't expect anybody else to have you. Because when you do this, that's almost putting yourself under a condition for that person to love you. And you don't want conditioned love. You want unconditional love. You know, I learned how to learn love conditionally through the church. I was grown up in a religious area. I learned how to love with conditions. Most people, whenever they follow, you know, the Catholicism, they see you have to earn your love. You have to do these commandments. You have to treat other people with respect, which, yes, treat other people with respect is the human thing to do. But if you have to do anything to achieve love from somebody, that's a condition. If God is unconditional love, why do you have a bunch of conditions that you have to hit to make sure you achieve it?
It's a great question. Thank you for that.
Your question, I felt like I fucking rambled.
Bro, you answered the fucking universe's question right there.
Okay.
No, I mean, sincerely, I'm deeply moved by what you've shared. And it's no doubt, because I've been through a journey as well, where I'm facing myself in the mirror and saying those same things. I'm capable. I'm, you know, you're smart enough. You're funny enough. You know, you're good enough. And you really dropped some wisdom on me there about creating a safe container with yourself. And it makes me reflect on how many men just simply don't feel safe in their body. Yep. Just not, and women as well. I mean, of course, I'm just talking specifically, it's mainly men listening to this podcast. I'm in men's work. It's like so many men don't feel safe in their own body. Like just to simply just like sit here face to face with a man and just be present in my body and listen and talk. Like, they're off in their head, or they're thinking of something else, or there's this anxiety to escape, to get out of my body, because we've just been taught to do that because there's just so much feeling. Maybe my dad died at 12 and I haven't faced it still. Or maybe my mom used to judge me all the time or say verbal abuse to me, and I still haven't faced the not enoughness, the loss of love of that. It just, it astonishes me when you say become safe with yourself, because it makes so much sense to me from my experience of, holy shit, I actually just did not feel safe in myself. I just did not feel safe. For so long. I'm curious, like, could you just give a three-step guide to self-love quickly, just for anyone who wants to do that, but are like, I don't actually know where to start. Could just a simple three-step to start would be really appreciated.
Yeah. Do you mind if I do it? So on this podcast, is this only visual, or is this visual and audio?
It's visual and audio, but many listen just on audio.
Okay.
Mainly audio.
All right. I'm going to share a zone exercise with you. For those of you listening via audio, I mentioned earlier, you can get a book called How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy by Paul Check. The zone exercise I'm going to share with you is going to be for zone one, which is your root chakra. That's your safety and security. And it's going to be called a breathing squat. And we're going to sync our breath with the movement. And by doing this, you're coming out of a sympathetic state and into a parasympathetic state. You're going to be breathing full diaphragmatic breaths, which is your first 2/3 of your breath is through your belly. Your belly is going to expand like a balloon. That last 1/3 is going to, you know, lift your chest up. And then you're going to exhale out. You're going to breathe in through your nose, because your nose has millions and millions of parasympathetic nerve endings. So whenever you breathe air through your nose, it's going to naturally send a signal to your brain, hey, it's time to calm down and get out of this anxious state. Zone one is working on, like I said, safety and security, financial security, loving yourself a little bit. And for a lot of people, they're stuck in their root chakra. And it's their mother chakra that they need to work on. So when you work on zone one, it's going to naturally affect every other zone above it, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Don't be surprised if emotions come up with this particular zone exercise. But this zone exercise is designed to bring you back to the present moment with your breath. And when you bring yourself back to the present moment with your breath, you realize it's just you and you only. And it's okay. And when you breathe in, you're going to breathe in and visualize the color of red, because red is the color associated with the root chakra. And you're going to feel its warmth, and you're going to be breathing in love. You're going to be breathing in love for yourself. And then when you exhale, you're going to exhale through your mouth, and you're going to exhale the color gray. That gray matter is what you're going to be energetically transforming by inhaling the red root chakra energy. And then exhaling out fear, anxiety, depression, any negative thought you have. Zone exercises were a key for me when I first started this, because it required me to be present with myself. And it's a form of energy building. And most people who are afraid to be seen by their own selves don't have enough energy to actually hold a container safe enough for themselves. So this exercise doubles as an energy building exercise. It's called a work in, not a work out. A work out is a catabolic state. A work in is an anabolic state. So when you're working out, you're moving energy outwards. You're using your body's energy. When you're working in, you're bringing energy into the body, and you're raising your energy level so that you can show up better to whatever it is next. This exercise is also super potent if you can go outside and get barefoot. When you go outside and get barefoot, you're going to keep your circadian rhythms lined up with the planet. Mother Nature is extremely helpful when it comes to calming the nervous system down. So just getting outside right there is going to help you come out of that sympathetic state and into a parasympathetic state. And when you are doing this, again, you're breathing in love and you're exhaling out fear. And I'm going to describe the zone exercise. You're going to stand up, proper posture or as best as you can, knees slightly bent. Get them in a position where you feel if you had to go take a poop in the woods, you would go poop in the woods. Keep your arms at the side. Take your first full diaphragmatic breath in. When you're at the top, drop into your squat and exhale. Only go as low as comfortable for you. Now, when you inhale, you're going to get out of your squat. You're going to stand through it. Exhale back down in. Inhale as you stand. Exhale as you drop back into your squat. I'm going to go about one more. Just out of curiosity, since you did that with me, what are you feeling right now in your body?
Yeah. I'm feeling energy in the middle of my chest, in my heart space.
Mm, yummy.
Yeah, I feel a little bit like I'm vibrating. It's mainly just in my torso area here. But yeah, that was beautiful for me for many reasons. I love the exercise, by the way. Thank you for sharing that. I'm glad I got to try it.
Yeah.
Frankly, even before we did this exercise, I was feeling a lot. A bunch of emotion came up for me about a minute before we went into that exercise. But that was super powerful for me. My posture has been a challenge for me in my life. On the left side, which I'm wondering has to do with suppressing my feminine at some point, potentially. I also play a lot of sports like volleyball with just like my right hand. So I think also a physical component as well. But what I'm saying is that I have had this strong intuition for a couple of years, at least now, that my emotional blocks are directly related to my posture and are directly related to the blocks I have in my breath in certain postures. And as I've gone into certain postures with certain breath, it has totally opened up my emotions. And I could easily do a certain, if I kept doing that specific thing or something a bit different with proper posture, I guarantee I'd be on the floor crying within 20 minutes. Almost assuredly.
You've got the correlation correct.
Mm.
However, the emotions are creating your posture.
Yes.
You're storing your emotions in your body's systems, in the cell walls. If you never choose to go through your emotions and feel them, you're going to create a body full of bodily aches and pains, dysfunction and dis-ease. You know, Paul says this quite a bit. 90 to 95% of all illnesses out there can be either eliminated or suppressed and lowered with right diet and lifestyle habits. 90 to 95% of everything out there that people are dealing with, if they have a proper diet and lifestyle management system in place for themselves, can be pain-free.
I absolutely believe that.
I know that was supposed to be kind of quick to share self-care.
No, it's fine.
I felt that was important because that's a zone exercise, and Paul recommends you do, especially if, you know, let's just say someone comes to me and a client, I send them all the check paperwork. I see their scores are in the red if they're all in the red, they need to be doing some type of work in and bringing love to themselves and bringing energy back into their body. They should not be doing any catabolic exercises. If you weigh 250 pounds and your life is super stressful, the last thing you need to be doing is working out, because you're putting more stress on the body, and the body can't decipher financial stress from emotional stress, from physical stress, from food stress, from environment stress. It just sees stress as stress. So from that standpoint, you need to be able to center yourself. If you're going to learn to love yourself, you got to figure out how to center yourself and meet yourself where you're at, because that's what loving yourself requires. You need to figure out, where am I at in my journey today, right now, in this moment? That practice helps you get into the present moment. You're supposed to practice it for 20 minutes. And if, let's just say I had a client come in and they were all in the red, I would give them, you're going to do a particular set of zone exercises for 20 minutes, three times a day. So that's 1 hour of working in, building that energy within themselves, bringing life force back into themselves, connecting to their breath, learning to stay in the moment. It's also nice because it's 20 minutes at a time. So breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, early morning, midday somewhere, evening before bed. It's great before bed because it's dropping you into a parasympathetic state, which allows you to go to sleep quicker and stay asleep longer. And it's great in the morning because it's energy building. And so if you're someone who wakes up and you're constantly groggy all the time, instead of reaching for a Red Bull, a coffee, a tea, or some sugary sweet snack for your stimulant, go do 20 minutes of this zone exercise. It's going, and do it outside barefoot. Who cares if anyone's, I mean, when we were in St. Louis, again, we were keeping up with the Joneses. So I went out my back door. I had a house to my left, to my right, and three houses in front of me. I was out in the backyard doing Tai Chi and just my boxers or just, you know, a pair of shorts. And people would be like, what, you know, the fuck's going on here? Doesn't matter. My life is bigger than what their question is.
Yeah, 1,000. Just imagine you in the backyard in your box, and there's like some big St. Louis fan, like, what the fuck? And they probably go back in the house and talk shit about you. And
yep. And you know what? That's okay.
And that's okay. That's real shit. Absolutely. I've had shit talk to my face. I've had shit talk. It's part of the journey. I think in 2023, if you start to live consciously and from your heart, you will likely get resistance from people that are not doing that.
You will get tons of resistance. I actually just ended a relationship with a pretty good friend of mine. Because of this, you know, he sent a post online and I responded to it. You know, I said, you know, I understand where you're coming from, and I don't overly feel I feel you're missing the mark, so to speak, when it comes to men's work. Men do need a safe space, and for you to say they do not need a safe space, and they need to be pushed into fear, and they need to be pushed into these resistances so that they can overcome it. Not all men can handle that.
Agreed.
And so it's required for those men who cannot handle that fear right away to just buck up and go through it. They need a safe space to learn how to figure out what it's like to operate within your masculine self. I had the masculine self beat out of me. So this past year has been something I've been really learning to figure out, how can I incorporate more fire? I had this fire at some point in my life, and then it was, you know, squirted on by the hose of physical abuse. And so now I'm learning to embrace that fire again. And by doing that, I'm putting myself out there more. When you put yourself out there more and you speak your truth, it's going to trigger people, and they are going to be nasty to you. And you have the opportunity to meet them with love and instead of hate, you know, because if you fight fire with fire, you just create a bigger fire.
Yeah, 1,000%. I love this for you. And thank you for sharing your journey with reclaiming your masculine fire. I think you're absolutely right with this, I guess old friend of yours, where you, where you confronted him with that, which, by the way, I honor you for having that confrontation and for speaking your truth. That's a beautiful step. I can imagine in your journey to do that with someone where there's an attachment that's there, a loving attachment there.
I just said thank you.
Oh, you just said thank you. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, connecting to the masculine fire, I was raised by a single mother for the most part. My dad was present in the home sometimes between age 0 and 6. I don't have many memories before that. I don't have many memories with him. And he was not present. So from 6 to 19, I didn't see my father physically except once a year for a weekend. And so I didn't have like that physical masculine presence around. And I'm not denigrating him in any way, because, by the way, he paid alimony every single month, which, if I recall correctly, 60% of the fathers in the U.S. do not, at least the full amount. And so that I was incredibly gifted from my father. I wouldn't have half the drive I have if it wasn't for my father. I wouldn't have, you know, half of who I am if it wasn't for him. Like, he helped me so much. And there was also a wound that occurred from not having that physical, not even emotional presence, but physical presence of a man. I mean, I was lucky to have my brother, but he's still a boy as well. He's only 2 years older than me. And so I had to relearn this masculine fire myself. And I felt like sports actually gave me a huge gift in that. Like, it kind of got me to tap into my aggression and just playing hockey against guys and shit like that. So I kind of got into that, but I find myself being afraid of things. I find myself not resisting using my hands and really digging in there. And I have a friend who grew up on a farm. Like, bro, look at the difference between our hands. Like, you got farm hands, bro. Like, okay. Like, cause he's just, you know, he's done that kind of work.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm really present to is, you know, for you to be, you're about 31, 32 or so.
Yeah. I'll be 32 this December.
Cool. When's your, I'm December 2. What date is yours?
December 30th.
Cool. I'm December 26th.
Oh, wow.
So it's very, very close. That's interesting. Cool. Yeah. Nice synchronicity.
Capricorns.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And my partner's a Capricorn too. Is Christy's your partner's name, yeah?
She's a Virgo.
She's a Virgo.
Yeah, Kirsty's a Virgo.
Got it. Cool. Anyways, I guess what I'm really present to is just, I love how much you're very open to learn, and you're very open to learn about yourself. You're very open to transformation. You have this incredible humility about you that I connect to and admire so much. And I love that at this stage, you know, you're already a man, and yet you're still finding what it means to be a man, you know, for you, and how to express your masculinity, because obviously the situation that, you know, that you've been through. And so I love that shit. I love when men, like, I live for the moments that men reclaim themselves, where they take their power back, where they're like, you know, admitting their faults, taking responsibility, yeah, and knowing what the work that they have to put in, and being an integrity and doing it, following through. To me, there's few things that create that level of purpose, emotion, connection, passion, and it's all like right fucking here. Mm-hmm. And it just, I'd like to begin wrapping up our conversation now, but just want to say that I'm just extremely inspired by that, and have been inspired by you throughout this conversation. And I really enjoyed our time together.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on here. This was a neat experience for me. You know, Paul's podcast was the first podcast I was on. Then Kirsty and I started our own. And then now I got invited to yours. So hopefully this is, you know, the third of many.
Yes, it's starting a new trend for sure.
Yeah.
If there's any men or women that want to get connected with you and your work,
yeah,
who have been inspired by your story. And by the way, for anyone who feels inspired, I recommend you don't hesitate to reach out. I really believe that in the moment of inspiration, we should act. So if you feel inspired, reach out. How could they reach you, Michael? Your Instagram or any website that you guys have?
Yeah. So as far as Instagram, it's Michael, MICKEL .Pratt, PRATT. TikTok, yeah, it's the exact same handle. Then you can find us at our website at nextgenerationsfitness.com. That's nextgenerationsfitness.com. I don't have the biggest of platforms when it comes to socials, but I show up pretty much almost every day. And you know, the type of information I share is whatever's on my heart.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, you have more and better shit to say than people that have millions of followers, may I say. It's something I think in our culture, we look at follower size as validity and credibility and authority. when it's total horseshit when you look at what so many people that have lots of followers are saying. So I recommend you give him a follow. He's got great stuff. I mean, my conversation, I can tell how much wisdom you have to offer, and I feel like we didn't even dive into, you know, a quarter of it. But thank you very much for the piece, and everyone check him out. And for everyone who's listening, thank you very much for your time and attention and for tuning in every week as always. I really appreciate it. And until next time, my friends, live a life that's true to you. See you.